B-Pod Studios.
Straightforward.
You lose too, big boy.
No holds barred.
I'm starting to think this guy's a con man.
Sports talk.
I got it. All right, I got it.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Murray, what'd you see on Friday when you watched the Celtics?
Hold on, I was fixing my... What did I see when I saw the Celtics on... Oh, the one thing I will give them credit for. They stepped on the Pacers' throat, you know, which you hadn't seen before. They have a penchant, unfortunately, to let teams back after they build a big lead, even if it's a terrible team like the Pacers. You didn't see that. They had a killer instinct on Friday. That was nice. And obviously, yes, I'm not blind. Gordon Hayward has looked better. But that was more about the Pacers on Friday night and how depleted they are. And they're just not good enough. This isn't going to be a great first-round series. Even if the Celtics swept them, I'm talking a sweep. I can't take it that seriously because the Pacers aren't that good. If they were playing...
Murray, I know you, though. You're so reactionary from the night before. I can't fathom that they would sweep this series.
Mike, I've been consistent with the Celtics for like a month and a half now. I don't believe in them. I don't think they're going past the second round.
That's long term for him.
Yeah,
it is. It is. He's usually night to night.
Well, I reserve the right to change my mind.
No, but keep going. I like it.
But no, so I'm not buying in. The more consistent thing with the Celtics this whole year is for them to trick you after, you know, going on a bit of a run and saying, oh, they figured it out, especially with Gordon Hayward. There's no coincidence, or there is, I don't think it's a coincidence, rather, that Gordon Hayward has played so well when you've had Jaylen Brown and Marcus Morris not breathing down his neck for minutes and taking time from him. He's been able to play better because he's not dealing with those two. He's been able to be a little bit more free and confident. So he's looked better, but let's see. Let's see when everyone's back and they're healthy and they're fighting for minutes and... I'm not taking the cheese on this team.
Didn't you tell me last week, let's see what they look like in Indiana?
Yeah, and then the Pacers had a complete no-show on Friday night. So, no, I'm not taking it seriously. I learned.
Is Murray being fair, Maz?
Yeah, of course
no,
I am.
God, no.
Yeah, I am.
No, but I commend him for it.
Billy, bring me up. I want to play this because, all right, so don't take my words for it. I'm not being the complete negative a-hole here. Here's Brad Stevens after the game on Saturday, quick, about the Pacers.
That wasn't their best game, and we know that.
So there you go. That wasn't their best game. That's Brad Stevens saying it, not me. They're not good enough. You can't learn anything from the Pacers and the Celtics in this first round. If they were playing a better team, Brooklyn, this Orlando team that swept them this year, I'd be more interested in that. I'd learn a little bit more about the Celtics. For me, you learn nothing till Milwaukee.
I mean, you know what that comment from Stevens is about was, let's not delude ourselves into thinking we'll just clean up on these bums in the playoff now because we fall asleep too fast. So he's making sure his team doesn't, you know, go into the playoff series all of a sudden with this idea of we're just going to coast and blow them away because they have to play to win. There's like a common theme there among a couple of the teams in town at the moment. You actually have to show up and try. How about that? Oh, isn't that something?
617-779-0985. Back to you, Pete in JP. Hi, Peter.
Hey, I'm bullish on the Celtics. Really bullish. Don't call me a green team, please. I go back to Havlicek, Sam Jones, and David Towns. I've been a fan every year. So I don't know what you call a green team, but I'll give you three reasons why I do not care about the fourth seed. I don't care about the way they played in the first three quarters of the season. They're a totally different team. When Al Horford and Aaron Baines were on the floor, they're statistically the best defensive team in the league. And they only had played about 15 games because of Aaron Baines' injuries. And Gordon Hayward, okay, if you watch him, he's a point guard. He's like Larry Bird, the way he dribbles the ball on passes. Plus, he's scoring now. And Kyrie's a total – I've been on Kyrie for a year and a half. But he's a totally different guy out there. He's engaged on the bench. He's playing defense. He's running around in his press conferences. He's not being a dink, if you will.
Ish. I'll give you three of your 4 points. You don't get 4 points. Not a green teamer, though, Maz. Don't call him a green teamer.
All of a sudden, Gordon Hayward's Larry Bird. That's where we are now.
You would disagree with that?
So, look, I'll tell you one of the things I like from that game Friday night. One of the things I liked was when Tatum had that little stretch there in the third quarter, right? Or beginning of the fourth, when he had the couple of dunks and the bench got up. Like, you remember the Marcus Morris comment from early in the year? He said, we don't root for each other. We don't pull for each other. It feels like some of that has gone. Okay, so that's good. Now, whether or not it's going to be there when things go bad, I don't know. So this is what I want to see. So last week, again, and to me, this is a huge point. they were, you know, they were on the road against playoff caliber teams or close. But in the NBA, that doesn't mean much.
Yeah, Eastern Conference playoff calibers.
Right. So it's a good sign, given what they were earlier in the year. But what happens when they face Milwaukee and or Toronto? What happens then? They get on the road and they're down by 8. They start doing that finger-pointing thing again where Marcus Smart starts yelling at Jaylen Brown or what? Like, what's going to happen? That's what I want to see.
Billy in Rhode Island for you, Maz, on the Red Sox. Yes, William.
I'm just going to make a comment about the Sox. And I'm not going to be a Sox hero here. I just want to say one thing. The Sox have scored 46 runs, which puts them in the middle of the pack as far as every other division. But the big number is 72 points against for the pitchers. Now, I'm not going to put it all on this, but I'm going to make one comment about it. When they let Sandy Leon go down to
Pawtucket,
Pawtucket. Listen, I played baseball for 22 years. Mm-hmm. I'm not a pro, but that sucker knew how to call a game.
Okay, Billy, I'll stop you right there. The catcher, Maz, why they're the worst pitching staff in baseball.
Yeah, and how many games did Christian Vasquez catch on this trip? 8? Like,
Most of them.
So Christian Vasquez is a bum now, too. Who everybody told me was a second coming to Pudge Rodriguez defensively. Now he's a bum, too. Not that Pudge was a great game caller either. But can we stop with the catching thing matters on some level. I'm not telling you it's a zero. But because there are, as Murray has pointed out, baseball players by definition are psychologically brittle, frail, weak. They are weak-minded individuals. So, yes, there is going to be a loss of comfort there with Sandy Leon getting sucked out of the mix. Chris Sale's been in the big leagues a long time. Cy Young caliber pitcher. David Price has been in the big leagues a long time. Cy Young caliber pitcher. Rick Porcello, another one. All these guys have been around. They've all been around. You're telling me you take a catcher out of there and they turn into the bullcrap that they've been on the mound over the last week, a week and a half?
9 ERA. The starting staff, is that right? 9
ERA? 9.11, I think it was. Horrendous.
And I was just didn't Swihart get the start yesterday in the shutout? Yes.
Yeah, right. Swihart played yesterday, correct.
The answer is yes.
Yeah, Swihart. And so they have two of their wins are with Swihart behind the plate.
And they shut him out.
Yes.
So what are we talking about the catcher for?
It's not about the catcher. It's about the pitcher. And you know what? It's about the mentality. It's the mentality. They won 108 games. They got the monkey off their back. And now all of a sudden these guys feel like they don't have anything left to prove.
And the manager won't set him straight.
So and he's a big part of it.
The manager's telling him to embrace last year and not forget last year and not turn the page. He's telling them to not turn the page on last year. I have never, ever heard a coach say that. I've never heard a manager embrace not turning the page. Jim and Worcester on Robert Kraft here on a Reentry Monday. What do you got, Jim?
Hey, if Bobby Kraft is innocent of doing nothing, why wouldn't Bobby Kraft want the video put out there of him doing nothing? And second of all, I don't know if you talked about this. Second of all, are we even sure we're talking about female prostitutes?
Oh, would you stop with that? I haven't heard that one. Would you please? That nonsense?
Again, I'm going back to the details in the police report that was filed. So everything is specified in there about whether it was male or female, and it was female.
I think he's joking. Okay. I think he's joking. I got a thought on Robert Kraft coming up, but again, you can weigh in on whatever you want, whenever you want, here on a Reentry Monday. A lot of stuff from the weekend. All four are on the board.
And all Kraft said was that he didn't do anything illegal.
He didn't say he wasn't there. So they haven't fought that one. But like I said, if anyone could do it, it's these guys. Deny, accuse. They'll come up with anything. They will come up with anything. So we'll see, you know, if he ultimately cops to actually being there. Tony and Holbrook on the B's. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How big of a loss do you see Miller's out for the first round?
It's a loss, but Tony, if that's the thing that brings you down, then you weren't a Stanley Cup team to begin with. I mean, it sort of frays the margins, and I think he was one of your better defensemen last year, in fact, or what was it, the year before against Ottawa? He had a good playoff either last year or the year. I don't know why I'm blanking on that. But look, Tony, he's always hurt. Always hurt. So this just gets it out of the way. At least you're not sitting there waiting for his next injury. Now he's done, and that's it. He's a third-pairing defenseman. You should be able to manage that. You should be able to patch that. And if Chara looks as good as he's looked and McAvoy looks as good as he's looked and et cetera, You should sure as hell get past Toronto. Whether you have, if Kevin Miller's a thing that prevents you from getting past Toronto, then God help me.
I just don't like the fact that they lost one of the guys who has size. That's all. To me, again, they got a limited number of bodies here of guys with size. Otherwise, you're going to get the Camphers, the Grizzlicks, the Krugs back there. And it may not hurt them in the first round because Toronto's faster. But it'll catch up with them eventually. So that's the part I don't like. You need big defensemen. Keith, the play in front of the net's going to get brutal the deeper you get.
Keith in New Hampshire on Kyrie Irving. What do you think, Keith?
I think that he's still just how he was before this weekend. Friday after the game, on the on-court interview, he said, "We know how a hostile environment like this is." And then he stopped and said, "Well, I know how it is."
I heard that.
So, Keith, you know what, Billy, can we grab that at some point? Ask our friends. It was probably the walk-off.
It was.
With NBC Sports Boston.
Yeah, so, I heard that.
So Vin should be able to get it too.
Yeah, he did. It's exactly what he said. I know it.
And
yeah.
That was hostile? The place was essentially a library in the second half.
Yeah, but they had something to do with that. And again, Murray, I'm not telling you Indiana's good because they're not. I'm just telling you the Celtics played better.
I'm glad you brought that up. You know what the Pacers' road record is in their last 10 games on the road?
1-9?
No. 0-10. They stink. And the Celtics' record against playoff teams, by the way, since the All-Star break, do you want to guess at that?
No, tell me.
3-9, two of which are against this gutless Pacers team that are nothing without Victor Oladipo. I'm not taking the cheese. You suckers want to do it, go right ahead. But this first-round series means nothing to me.
Murray not buying on the Celtics. You? We'll continue to get your thoughts after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Mad.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
Johnson fumbles. Awkward flip shot from the baseline is no good. Chemi Ojeleye will dribble the Celtics into the front court. So much drama, so much frustration all year for the Boston Celtics. But they are coming down the stretch like the thoroughbreds many people thought they were. They win again, and the showdown, back-to-back Friday night wins for the Celtics over the Indiana Pacers, and they are an inch from home court in the opening round. The final score, Boston 117, Indiana 97.
Emphatic showing by the Celtics. Murray's not buying.
Ooh, the thoroughbreds. Come on.
Your thoughts, folks. That leads us also to the Rodenheiser Take of the Day with Maz.
Yep, last week's hottest takes brought to you by Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC, and Electric, serving Metro West for over 90 years and proud sponsor of the Patriots. I said this to you last week. I don't care about the starting lineup. Hayward, in that game he played on Friday night, Hayward's got to be on the floor at the end of these games. I mean, it's night and day when he's out there, really. And if the whole idea from the very beginning was to get Irving, Hayward, Horford, Tatum, and then whoever, Smart, Brown, Morris, pick the fifth guy, Baines, whatever, I don't care. But if that's what the idea was, he's got to be out there at the end of these games. He's making a difference right now. He's huge.
Why?
I just think it's, particularly on the offensive end, I think that he really is an excellent decision maker with the ball. In that Indiana game, there was a fast break. I don't know if you remember it. Celtics get the rebound. They kick the ball out to Kyrie on the wing, on the left side. Hayward was in the middle. Wanamaker was running up the right sideline. Hayward yelled to Kyrie and pointed to Wanamaker, and Kyrie made the pass. And Wanamaker went in for a layup. But it's almost like, even when he doesn't have the ball, he knows where it's supposed to go. Like, I found it interesting that he said to Kyrie, "Yo, look!" And Kyrie made the pass. So Kyrie got the credit on the broadcast, but Hayward's the one that pointed out the play. I tried to pull the video and put it on our Facebook page the other day, and I couldn't get it to transfer properly. But the flow of the game, the movement, the spacing, which has always been there with Hayward, he sees it. I mean, he does. He gets it. His understanding of where people are out there is off the charts good.
Back to your phone.
Off the charts.
As promised, Steve in Taunton. Go ahead, Steve, on the Celts.
Good afternoon, boys. Hey, you know, as much as I'm encouraged by the way the Celtics have played lately, I'm still not really buying it because of the bad shot selections. Big guys taking threes. There should only be a chosen few taking threes. That just irks the hell out of me. And yes, Jim Murray, I'm not taking the cheese. Thanks, okay. Thanks, guys.
Smart man, Steve.
Have they dialed that back at all? Have you noticed that? I mean, I'm asking because I can't tell you. The three is the NBA. It's the whole league, Steve.
You know what? I'd have to look up the attempts. But I'll tell you what, it feels to me like they are getting a wider variety of shots, like inside, outside. There's more of that. I'll look up the three attempts.
And it hasn't felt so glaring, I guess, for lack of a better term, as of late.
Forced.
Yeah, so forced because Marcus Morris hasn't really been playing all that much, and we've had more Brad Wanamaker than Terry Rozier, which, I'll tell you what, I would actually like to see more of that in the playoffs. That won't happen, because God forbid you upset Terry Rozier, who's mostly sucked all season, but I'd like to see more Brad Wanamaker.
The shot selection, this is really apropos of nothing, but I read it, and it so rings true to me about when I watch Al Horford play, he never takes a bad shot. I feel like he never misses. I feel like every time the ball goes up, it goes in. And I feel like he's automatic and he can't shoot enough as far as I'm concerned because I never see him take a bad shot. The Globe wrote something over the weekend. It bears out statistically. Himmelsbach wrote that the Celtics, and they chart all this stuff, of course, because the nerds have taken over. But the Celtics, and this is before yesterday's game, the Celtics have fired up 7,235 shots this season, and all of them have been charted and sorted for future use. So they chart every single shot, and they found that Celtics forward Al Horford, who's in the midst of one of his finest offensive seasons, has taken 711 shots this year. Again, this is before yesterday. Did he even play yesterday? He's taken 711 shots this year. And according to the Celtics, just 19 have fallen into the not good category. Just 19.
I believe that.
And that's, you know, it's a little subjective. It's if it's contested, it's not good unless it's from your spot on the floor where you're really good from and you make contested shots. So it's just sort of weighted to your sort of personal abilities, and they chart what's a good shot, what's a bad shot. He's only, of 711, only 19 were quote-unquote, as gauged by the Celtics, not good for him. Himmelsbach also writes that Horford has been particularly lethal from inside the arc, making a career-high 60% of his two-pointers, 60.5% of his two-pointers. And they are hardly just close-range looks. Among the players who have taken at least 100 shots between 8 and 16 feet, Horford has made a league-leading 55%. How about that? Horford is the best mid-range shooter in the league, if defined, you know, between 8 and 16 feet. He's made 55% of those shots. That's best in the league. Think of that.
Yeah, I'm not surprised because you know what? He almost never takes a stupid shot. He's usually open. He's square to the basket.
Stretch it out a little bit from 15 to 19 feet, and Horford's 55.9% clip, trails only Kevin Durant. So from 8 to 16 feet, he's the best shooter in the league. From 15 to 19, he's the second best to Durant. And that's when I watch it, that's how I feel. He never freaking misses.
So that last sentence that you read, did it say contested or uncontested or just distance?
In general.
Okay. So I was going to say the only difference to me is Durant makes him contested.
Yeah, but Horford, the thing is, if they're contested, he doesn't take them.
No, that's right.
He takes uncontested.
No, he's a lot like Hayward in that way, in that he makes good decisions. And I did look up the three attempts in the last seven games. On average, by the way, the Celtics this year have averaged somewhere around, 35 threes a game. Okay, that's ish the number, ish. The last seven games, 25, 27, 20, 40. That was the win against Miami at home. And then 24, 27, 31. So it does feel like, anywhere from 8 to 10 shots a game fewer.
It's ticking down.
Yes, which I like. And, they're using Horford in the post when he has someone he can go up against down there. They dump the ball into him. He throws in a little jump hook. Or, to me, their offense is much more diverse now that it's running the way it's running.
Here's the deal, Murray. In a vacuum, should you trust them? No, not after this crap bag season. But they're playing a horrible team in the first round. They're going to waltz. They're going to get their swag. You're going to hear all this nonsense about them getting their confidence and their swagger and blah, blah, blah. And it's going to be legit.
I'm already annoyed by it.
And yeah, me too. And then they're going to face a Bucks team who, let's face it, do we know if they really know how to win in the postseason? I mean, Giannis is not quite ready.
He's going to be the better coach and the MVP of the season this
year. Okay, right. The coach is good. Budenholzer is good, and he's already beaten Brad. So the coaching, you don't have a coaching advantage against the Bucks, and you're facing the MVP. But it's a different game in the postseason, man. I mean, Giannis won the MVP by stomping people, by running up and down the floor and stomping on people. in the if you're playing the right way in the postseason, it's a half-court game. And he's not really – you can dump it to him down low, but you watch. Last possession sort of stuff, he gets it out on the wing, it's a disaster. He has no handle. Or it's not good enough in the half court. And so then what are you dealing with? You know, what's left? Middleton for a spot-up shot and Brogdon and his injury, who knows? You don't know if that team is built to win in the postseason, that Milwaukee team.
You're right, but they're good enough to make the Celtics face adversity. And then let's see what happens.
Fair point.
Especially in Milwaukee, right? 33-7, I think the Bucks are at home right now. Like, you know, they got one more left. Like, that's where the test is going to come in Milwaukee.
Pete in New Bedford on the Bruins. Go ahead, Pete, here on a reentry Monday.
Yeah, how you doing? How's it doing today?
Good. What do you got?
Yeah, listen, I was just wondering, you know, you guys keep on saying about the Tampa Bay Lightning, we're going to meet them in the second round. How do you know those guys are going to lose in the first round? There's no guarantee on that, is there?
Nope, there's no guarantee. Go Columbus.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's it, babe. Yep, you got to hope for an upset. There's going to have to be an upset here. Either you're knocking off Tampa when no one sees it coming, or Columbus is. I don't love Columbus's chances. Tampa's not just the best team in the league. They're the best team in the league in the last 10 years. They just set a wins record.
They tied at 62 wins.
They tied an NHL record for wins. So this is like shaping up to be an all-time kind of team. But I said to Maz, you know, let's talk about Tampa when we get there. All right? If you get there, get past Toronto. That ain't no slam dunk. You don't play well against Toronto. You don't defend against Toronto. You will lose.
I mean, it blows me away that people think that the Toronto series is somehow a layup. Like, effectively, over the last 2 years, you and Toronto have been dead even.
Dead?
Pretty much.
Dead even, those two teams. You don't defend, you'll lose. Period, story over. That's where you're better than them. Defensively, on paper, goaltending. You don't do those things, and it's up and down, and then you're looking to pull something out of your rectum like you did the last two times you played them. You should have lost both of those series, if you're being honest with yourself. Jason in Hyannis. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, so honestly, with Kyrie, this is the thing. So he won a championship. He hit that one shot, yes. But let's be honest. The whole way they got there, that was with LeBron. He gets the whole thing with that one shot. They won the championship.
Jason, you're so right. You're so right. You're so right.
I am so right. I'm looking in the sky, looking at right now.
Yep.
It's unbelievable what I do.
Felger and Maz Gold Star, Jason. It is unbelievable what you do. I'm not even being sarcastic. Like, Kyrie gets credit for taking a team deep in the playoffs? No, sir. You were a complimentary player, a really important one who hit the shot because LeBron's not a last shot guy either.
He's not.
You know, just talking about Giannis. I mean, even after all these years, LeBron's not. And believe me, he's hit him, but it's not like. It's just a little different with him. He's better off with the other guy taking the shot. Ray Allen, so-and-so, whatever, Kyrie. That's where he's always been. So Kyrie hit the shot. Great. The reason they were in that position in the first place is because Draymond Green decided to dangle his jockstrap in LeBron's face in game four, and that got LeBron's attention, and they went on a little run, and then they got to the end of game seven, and Kyrie hit the shot. But Kyrie led no one, but in no way, shape, or form was he the driver of them getting to that moment in time.
No, that was LeBron's team. Kyrie's a better shooter. I mean, that's really, you know, and ultimately.
And they were on their way to getting smoked again in that finals until Draymond got stupid and got LeBron's attention.
Yeah, and honestly, but I do think what happened late in that series or in the middle of that series, I want to go back and look. I think Kyrie started playing better. And all of a sudden he started scoring. And maybe that's a product of LeBron giving the ball up. But I also think that, look, in a lot of ways, his role here should be similar. They play better when it runs through Hayward.
Well, this is what Stevens wants, no question about it. Red Sox, Celtics, Bruins, everything's on the table on a reentry Monday, including a Patriots minute right after the update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
All right, here's your Patriots minute. which is different than the Robert Kraft Minute. Robert Kraft Thought of the Day coming up in a little bit. The Patriots Minute is brought to you by Peter King, Football Morning in America, NBCSports.com, where he writes now. He handicapped the Josh Rosen Derby. Teams most likely to be in on Josh Rosen. Number one on the list, Washington Redskins. Says he would be an excellent scheme fit in the offense of Coach Jay Gruden and offensive coordinator Kevin O'Connell. Washington also has a buttload of draft picks in the top 100 at 15, 46, 76, 96. So King says, I doubt the Cardinals will have an offer of a 2019 top 50 pick for Rosen. So those reports of the Giants already offering the second round pick, King doesn't think that that's actually happened. In fact, he thinks the Cardinals won't get anything in the top 50 for him. So 15, 46, 76, you don't need 15, maybe 46, maybe 76 gets it done. So that's number one.
That makes sense. Washington's quarterback situation's a mess.
Right. They have all sorts of problems. Alex Smith, a tweener guy to begin with, who's also hurt and won't play this year. So they need to reset at that position. Number two, New York Giants. New York Giants, 6, 17, 37, and 95. Those are their four picks in the top 100. He says, unlikely that Dave Gettleman, the GM there, will give the 37th pick for Rosen, in part because of value and in part because the Giants really aren't sure if all the noise about Rosen being difficult has any merit. But, of course, Eli's older, so there's a fit there. Giants are number two. Number three, Denver and Don Elway. Peter King says, unlikely, but because the Broncos will take a young quarterback this year or next, you can't eliminate them from consideration. Number four, Miami. The Dolphins' quarterback plans are shrouded in secrecy. Brian Flores and offensive coordinator Chad O'Shea have learned well from Bill Belichick. But I'm told the only way the Dolphins go for any quarterback is if they're convinced that he's going to be the answer for the next 10 years. And it's hard to imagine feeling that after watching Rosen last year. And so those are the four. Then he says in the next paragraph, I'd eliminate New England. I just don't sense the interest there. He also says, I'd all but eliminate the Chargers. Phillip Rivers seems primed to play at least two more years, and they just gave Tyrod Taylor $6 million guaranteed over the next two to back up. But he says, I'd all but eliminate New England. I just don't sense the interest there. That make you happy, Murray?
It does, yeah. I mean, if they were into him, fine, I could live with it because it seems like that would be good value. But otherwise, build around Brady. F the future.
So, again, I don't like it. I mean, to me, this is the kind
of
guy.
Is that a T-shirt this year?
You know what? I'm going to get on that.
I mean, they went from unequivocally the sweetest to F the future.
Yep.
I like it. Go ahead.
Kids spell future without the F. The F-U. Now that I think of it. So, look, to me, you know, if they don't like him, they don't like him. You know, that's one thing. But I think the profile of the player is something they should be interested in.
The profile's perfect. If they don't like the player, of course, don't take the player.
So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, and again, Peter King's assessment there is based on their sentiments on the player, right?
That's right.
Like he
says, I don't sense interest there.
Right. So they don't love him.
I mean, don't tell me that the cost is too high, because if it's not even going to be a top 50 pick, that's good value if you believe he's the guy.
I mean, they got three of the first 102 or six of the first 102, whatever it is.
You drafted Garoppolo at what? 64? 62, I think. 62, right. Something like that. So what's the difference? If it costs you 50, 40, you know, if that's the guy, it's the guy. They don't think he's the guy.
Yeah, so again, that's sort of a different assessment, but I look at it again as the profile of the player. Denver just got Flacco, and they might have interest, right? So Denver's thinking long-term, there's a guy we can bring along. Like, okay, so now I'm not telling you Flacco's Brady, okay, but he's a veteran guy who's been around a little bit. He's younger than Brady.
You mean other teams are planning for the future?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
Well,
even though they have a guy.
There is no future here. There is no future here. It's all about to just play out Murray's analogy. He wants to keep the party going. It's all about doing one more line of blow at 5 o'clock in the morning as the sun is coming up with Belushi, who's about to expire in the bathtub.
You're using Denver as the comp?
I didn't bring up Denver. Don't look at me.
If Denver and the Dawn are interested in Josh Rosen, big red flag for me. That idiot who drafted Paxton Lynch, who's even in the league anymore. That bum. Go ahead, Maz.
I was just reading from King.
No, I'm done.
So, but no, here there is no future. Or what I really think it is that people now think you snap your fingers and have a quarterback.
Yeah, no,
it's really no sweat. You just pick up the next guy.
Yeah, just like they did the last time.
Meanwhile, half the league has been floundering for decades and still don't have a guy. But you automatically just, Oh, well, I mean, we'll just draft the next game one this time. Yeah.
Yeah, Felger, the rest of the league doesn't have Bill.
Good God. You may not have Bill. The longer Brady hangs on, unless Bill makes the call. I mean, you're right. If Bill hangs on another 3-4 years, then okay, then he can. There's a little bit more rope there. But how long is he? How long is he going
to
be here?
So I still think the Patriots are going to do something at quarterback. I'm sorry, I go back to that.
And more importantly, I want to time out for the guy to have work under his belt for when Brady retires. You hit the ground running. It's not like you're bringing someone along. Someone's ready to go.
Yes, and there was that report that the Patriots still aren't totally convinced that Brady's going to play beyond next year, 2019. I mean, so like if that's the case, then you better get someone in there because I don't think it's Danny Etling. Murray, Danny.
No, but let's just do one more line, one more keg stand with Etling, yeah. So we can, you know.
Because this is the best party with the best quarterback of all time, and I want more. And a seventh title. How about an eighth? More Brady. The party will not end. I'm pumped for this draft now. I really am, just like last year, because I'll be rooting against a quarterback getting drafted by the Patriots.
They're going to do something to quarterback.
That's what you thought last year, too.
Yeah, I did.
Danny Etling in what, the seventh round? Oh, I hope the same thing happens.
You know what?
Some bum that'll never see the field.
I'm going to laugh my ass off. I am going to laugh my ass off when you, in your coke-riddled freaking frenzy, are watching Danny Etling on a Sunday for a team that's 3-13. Or whatever the hell it is. Chasing I'm going to be laughing my ass off.
All because you wanted Brady to get one more when he's already got more than anyone's ever had.
Yeah, because you had to do another line.
There's your Patriots Minute. We get back to your thoughts on everything right after these words, including Spinweight Brewer. You catch his act on Saturday, Miz?
Oh, yeah.
Colton Brewer?
Yeah, that was good.
He does spin a nice curveball up, though. I'll tell you.
He spins it like a mother.
Pretty curveball. He really does. That's after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Miz on 98.5. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Miz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Line shot to left, and this one's going to win the ball game. Kelly with a shot down the line, and Arizona walks it off. 5-4. There's your final tonight here at Chase Field for Kelly's first career walk-off. To drive in on that, and that's it.
Bullpen had a good day yesterday. Saturday, not so much. Colton Brewer gives it up in the ninth to Arizona. Had a runner thrown out either at third or home in that inning as well.
Yeah, at home. Mookie Betts threw out a guy at the plate. It was a good play by Mookie.
Got a free out there. Colton Brewer. So we made fun of the signing and fun of the player in spring training because someone on the Globe wrote a story about his elite spin rate. And the nerds, how the nerds have just taken over. Exit velocity, launch angle, spin rate, blah, blah, blah. This guy apparently has an elite major league spin rate. And as I watch him pitch, Maz, you know what? He's got a nice curveball.
He does. He's got a good hook.
He spins it up there pretty good.
Yeah. No, he can spin the crap out of it.
Beautiful little spin right there.
Oh, yeah.
I know exactly what they're talking about.
Yeah. No. He spins it like a mother, man, like a top.
He spins the crap out of
he
it.
He does. It gets hit, but he spins it.
That's right. It's not like he missed bats with it, but it spins up there really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Tight little curveball there.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday, though, the bullpen wins you a game. Really.
Single for Colton Brewer, the last three batters he faced. Single. Lose.
Spun it right onto the bat. But anyway, the Globe yesterday... Or today, after yesterday's game, says five Red Sox relievers, if one considers starter Hector Velasquez, thus, combined to deliver 9 scoreless innings, Murray, oh, this is for you. 5 Red Sox relievers combined to deliver 9 scoreless innings on just 3 hits,
Ooh. Striking
out 8 and walking just 1. The shutout highlighted what has been the most consistent element of the Red Sox to date. The bullpen has been outstanding. The group is well aware that it offered the most compelling rebuttal possible to those who were skeptical of a bullpen that lacked an established closer to start the year. So they're 3-8. They won one of their last four. The bullpen did not implode. They beat a National League team. And you know what you're getting, Murray?
Bleh. The ball's on this team. For them to be going bleh about the bullpen and just, you know, still reliving last year.
The group is well aware that it offered the most compelling rebuttal possible to those who were skeptical of a bullpen that lacked an established closer to start the year. They've won 3 of 11 games. And on their third win, the Globe, by extension, the Red Sox, are going to go, how do you like us now?
So
you've got to be kidding me.
Okay, so the Wheel of Gutless Bums has been transferred to the starters so far in the first 11 games of the season. So fine. So they've been less sucky than the rotation. But after Rick Porcello got his face ripped off again on Friday night, Brian Johnson came in. Is Brian Johnson part of that bullpen? Yes.
Yes, he is.
And he served up a meatball that would have made Tony Fossis blush for a grand slam. One of the worst pitchers I have seen in like 20 years. So part of the bullpen. But no, tell me how the bullpen is the strength of this team right now.
It offered a compelling rebuttal yesterday, Maz.
That's the part that cracks me up. Rebuttal to what? 2-9?
Why don't you show up and play the games? What are you worried about those who were skeptical of your bullpen? You're 3-8. Why are you worried about what people are saying?
I mean, it's unbelievable. No, it is. Because I saw the same comment. I said, you've got to be kidding me. And again, I go back to a comment that Matt Barnes made after the game. We really needed that one. That one?
Well, but that's different.
It's all of it.
That's different than winning your third game in 11. And Brandon Workman saying, we were obviously really doubted coming into this thing. You're talking about the doubters? Well, why are you worried about what anyone is saying about you? You're 3-8.
Yeah, I tell you across the board that they're not with it. They're totally, looking at it from the wrong perspective is what I'm getting at. They're 3-8 and they're celebrating one win in Arizona. They're 3-8 and they're celebrating the performance of their bullpen. They're 3-8 and they're still talking about last year. Hello?
Do you want to hear my...
Hello? Anybody home? Hello? Like, it's unbelievable. Absolutely mind-numbing, the stuff that they're digging in on.
Do you want to hear my favorite comment from the weekend?
Go.
Quote, I've been encouraged by myself, said Cora. I've been encouraged by myself.
Sounds like a Kyrie comment.
I've been encouraged by myself, the ever-confident manager said. I've been able to sleep and stay calm and all that. I know a lot of people were questioning that. Again, with what people are questioning. Why are you paying attention to what people are questioning or not? You've won 3 of 11 games. What does it matter? What is being said? I know he says a lot of people were questioning that. How's he going to react to a tough stretch? I've been encouraged by myself, Murray. I don't know if you know that, but I'm pretty encouraged. I'm pretty pleased with myself.
Kyrie.
I've been encouraged by myself, the ever-confident manager said. Like, you've got to be kidding me again with this. I mean, they did it all last year, this chip on their shoulder, what people are saying about them. But it's one thing when you're 8-3. When you're 3-8, would you stop worrying about what people are saying about you and, focus on winning that game?
Yeah, listen, they are not at all focused on the 2019 season. That's what I'm getting at. They're not focused on what the actual task is now, which is winning the games.
And once again, I've never seen a coach just flat out reject turning the page, it's a new year and we have to reestablish ourselves, as Alex Cora has. He has flat out rejected. Every coach does it. It's coaching 101. You go from one year to the next and it's a clean slate. We have to reestablish everything that we did last year. Last year doesn't count. That trophy is for last year, not this year. It's a whole new ball game. Everybody says it. Everybody says it. And Belichick and the Patriots follow through with it better than anyone we've ever seen. But at least everyone says it. Not Cora. And again, John Tomasi now with NBC Sports Boston. His story online today. Alex Cora did not want to turn the page, and now it's clear why that was a terrible idea. Good job, Tomasi. Turn the page, writes John. Alex Cora found the concept bewildering. When the Red Sox manager arrived in Fort Myers this spring, he saw no reason to stiff arm 2018. Pages only need turning after negative outcomes, not when they're filled with champagne-soaked confetti. Quote, do we really want to turn the page? Cora asked in February. It's a book and we wrote a chapter last year and let's write a new chapter this year, but we can always go back and learn from it. He said that the first day of spring training and he said it again yesterday. Turning the page doesn't make sense for us because we can go to our memory bank. I've never heard a coach or manager do this.
No, me neither. I'm flabbergasted by the whole thing, especially given the way they came out and played, because I think it's all related. They won their title. Don't you get it? This is the modern athlete now. LeBron gets his championship and he coasts. Durant gets his championships in Golden State and he coasts. And so some of it's generational, but I also told you, I think it's a reflection on this group of players in that uniform. There was pressure on them to win. They won. They finally got out of the first round and they steamrolled to a title. They don't have to win anymore, Mike. They don't have to do that. What's wrong with you? They got their title now. It's all good.
Tomasi explains Cora's confidence, cockiness. Boy, he is cocky. Tomasi says, for the last 2 years, he could be forgiven for believing his leavings filled the air with a scent of the sweetest potpourri, meaning his crap doesn't stink. He could be excused for believing that. Well, he departed the broadcast booth to join the 2017 Astros as a bench coach, promptly winning a World Series. He then left Houston to become the Red Sox manager, promptly winning another title with the most overwhelming season in franchise history. Along the way, he impressed with his unflappability and infectious cockiness. If Cora were a gesture, it would be a dismissive wave. We'll be fine, he said, after virtually every crushing loss last season, including the 7-hour, 18-inning World Series stunner. 2 days later, the Red Sox hoisted a trophy. But 2019 has arrived like an overhand right, and for the first time in his managerial career, Cora finds himself staggered and blinking away blood. And refusing to talk about last year like it's past tense.
Well, so that's,
I added that part.
And so that's the other part of the Cora comment that irritates me. He says, what did he say? I've been impressed with myself. What was the comment?
Again, who talks like this other than Kyrie? You're right. Quote, I've been encouraged by myself.
Encouraged by myself. So like he sits there and talks and encourages himself? I'm being a wise ass.
I'll tell you, Felger, you're pretty sweet, man. I'm impressed by you. You know what? I'm impressed by myself.
Like Stuart Smalley.
No. I am damn impressed by me. I am. I'm maybe 3-8, but I'm pretty damn snappy over here.
Good enough. I'm smart enough. Gosh darn it, people like
me. I'm going to encourage myself on the ride home tonight.
I've been encouraged by myself, said Cora. I've been able to sleep and stay calm and all that. I know a lot of people were questioning that. How's he going to react to a tough stretch?
Okay, so here's my other point. It's the first 11 games. None of us are saying that this is an 8-alarm fire, for crying out loud. Has he really been tested? So it's a little bit of a test to start the year. A little bit. This isn't, DEFCON 1. This is more like DEFCON 5. People like me make it sound like DEFCON 1, but it's DEFCON 5. And the fact that he's already addressing it, I haven't seen them snap out of it yet, have you?
Nope, have not. So that's on the board. Everything. Reentry Monday. All four teams, really, are talkable, and we'll talk about them after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.